that in this time of election, and that people are excited, and people are getting involved, and people want to be doing things, and we pray that you watch over all of us, that we act as in a way to glorify you. Help us tonight to make good decisions, be wise, and with discernment make decisions that is good for the greatest number and for your glory. We pray in your name. Amen. We do have some recognitions and proclamations to present. I think you all know this, that proclamations are often done as a tangible thing, but it reflects how the city feels about things that people are doing in our city. And that's what we want to do tonight. There's a couple of things. We're going to Public Service Recognition Week. Kelly, you want to come up here as head of public servants for the city of Nacogdoches?
I know, surprised you, didn't
it? Yes.
Get that look off your face, the deer in the headlight look. Over here.
Particularly, I mean, of course, public servants include anybody that works in the county or the city government, the firemen, the people around town, but it also, honestly, you're in charge of our human resources here in the city. But Kelly would be the first to tell you that public service stretches from Little League coaches to church volunteers, that what makes this town great is everybody has the heart of a public servant that I know, and they're willing to give of themselves in whatever area in which they find passion. And this is the spirit of this proclamation, though it is specifically for those government workers who come every day to do things sometimes that are rather repetitive and mundane, collect tickets, talk to people who are mad, but they keep a great attitude, and they choose that, and it makes the difference how we deal with those kinds of problems, and you set a good example for them in the city. I'm sure Joe has those. Judge English, there is, yeah, I saw him. Glad you're here, Joe. People in your staff handle all those issues of public service. So in the spirit of that, I will read this. It says that whereas Americans are served every single day by public servants at the federal, state, county, and city levels, these unsung heroes are busy entering their phones all day at all hours. They do the work that keeps our nation going. And whereas public employees take not only jobs, but they take oaths. And whereas many public servants, including military personnel, police officers and firefighters, border patrol officers, embassy employees, health care professionals, and others, as I mentioned, they risk their lives each day in service to the people of the United States and around the world. And whereas public servants, they include teachers, they include doctors and scientists, train conductors, astronauts, nurses, safety inspectors, laborers, computer technicians, social workers, and you can make your own list, and countless other occupations and volunteers. Day in and day out, they provide the diverse services demanded by the American people of their government, and they do this with efficiency and integrity, and by choice. Whereas without these public servants at every level, continuity would be impossible in a democracy that regularly changes its leaders and its elected officials peacefully. Now therefore be it proclaimed that I, Roger Van Horn, Mayor of the City of Nacogdoches, and on behalf of the City Council, do hereby recognize May 1-7, 2011, as Public Service Recognition Week, and encourage all citizens to recognize the accomplishments and contributions of government employees at all levels, federal, state, city, and county. We couldn't get them all up here. Kelly, you're going to take care of that for us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You bet. Sarah, you put it on hold just for a minute?
Yes.
You're the greatest. Don't you worry about it. Does anybody not know this woman yet? She's everywhere. Sarah O'Brien is everywhere and always with a smile and lifts her spirits when you're around her. And if she's got your eye, her eye on you, you might as well get ready to do something because you're going to be put to work, huh?
Okay.
As Mr. Bray maybe has a different technique. You come at us a little quieter. Yes, you do. But he is, as you know, is the guardian of all of our historic sites in town. He has a passion for that and a heart for that. And sometimes it's exactly what we need because in our busy lives we forget sometimes our heritage that is in on our streets. And we thank you for that effort. It's not always easy. It's not. But we appreciate, these are some of these servants we were just talking about who take care of this city when we're going about our business. And we do appreciate it very much. And this proclamation reads that whereas historic preservation is an effective tool for managing growth and sustainable development, revitalizing neighborhoods and fostering local pride, and maintaining community character while enhancing livability, and whereas historic preservation is relevant for communities across the nation, both urban and rural, and for Americans of all ages, all walks of life, and all ethnic backgrounds. And whereas it is important to celebrate the role of history in our lives and the contributions made by dedicated individuals in helping to preserve the tangible aspects of the heritage that has shaped us as people. It matters what the people before us have done. We can't ever forget that. And whereas celebrating America's treasures is the theme for National Preservation Month 2011, it's co-sponsored by Texas Historic Commission and the National Trust for Historic Preservation. And therefore, be proclaimed that I, Roger Van Horn, Mayor of the City of Nacogdoches, and on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim May 2011 as Preservation Month in the City of Nacogdoches and call upon all the people of our city to join their fellow citizens across the United States in recognizing and participating in this special observance. So we thank you very much. All your work. It means much more than even this, and we thank you very much. Those are the things that make it fun living in that house. Now we'll get down to our agenda items. As our tradition, we will look at the consent agenda. And there is only one item, the approval of minutes for the regular session of April 9th. That's it. Moved and seconded that we accept the consent agenda as presented. And before we start our regular agenda, we have some new guests come in. Are those students, classes? Yeah. Why are you here? I'm glad you're here. Are you represent a particular group?
Yes, they're lawyer for human recreation and prevention for that's a bit.
Well, glad we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. So now we'll look at item number 6 on our regular agenda, and it is a public hearing, as I hope for the did we not for the consent agenda. All in favor, please, of the motion. All opposed. Thank you. This is a public hearing that we're about to do, and as for those of you who there are open meetings, all meetings are open, where people can come and go as they please in the press. There are special meetings called public hearing meetings where it is by law demanded that all citizens get a chance to speak for and against these issues that are prepared under public hearing, like zoning, like when we deal with money, there are public hearings, and that's what this is. This item is a public hearing item. And we're going to consider the establishment of Commercial Industrial Reinvestment Zone number 27 for the City of Nacogdoches. Mr. Phil Todd. Mr. Phil Todd, another dedicated public servant. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. This is a request for a reinvestment zone. The creation of a reinvestment zone by adopting this ordinance tonight is the first step in an economic development project. The specific details of the proposed development in the project will be discussed at a later council meeting, but tonight you are considering the creation of a reinvestment zone so that economic development incentives could be offered to this particular property. But just for your consideration, this property does include an existing structure located on the northwest loop at 330 Northwest Stallings Drive. It's located north of Durst and south of Douglas Road. The specific portion of lot 15A3 is the westernmost portion of the lot. It's approximately 190 feet wide, as you can see on the drawing there, fronting loop 224. This property is owned by, it is Mass Motorsports. It's the existing structure on the property. They are proposing a two-phase development, and this would be a reinvestment zone covering phase one. Bill King from NCO is here to answer any questions about the development. I believe Mr. Mass has some family obligations and was not able to make it.
Are there any questions from the field? Just to make sure that we understand clearly, again, from the people that are here and perhaps the people that read about this reinvestment zone is a generic term that we use, that we create in a particular area to enhance economic development or industrial development. Is that correct?
Correct. To enhance commercial or industrial development. If when you create a reinvestment zone, you then can offer economic development incentives such as tax abatement.
This is just the first step.
Correct. Correct. This opens the door to the discussion for future incentives.
And it's specific for a piece of land, not necessarily for whoever may occupy it. It's that piece of land.
Correct. It is specific to this, to the particular boundaries, to the particular 190 feet wide of the frontage of lot 15A3 on Northwest Dawn's Drive.
I suspect if we have prospects in another part of the city, we would have to do the same process if we're going to offer a certain incentive.
Correct. You create a reinvestment zone for each particular tract of land, unless there are unless there is a large group of properties which all were interested in,
sure,
in similar incentives and similar development. The project has applied through myself and the city manager's office, and we have reviewed the application and are comfortable with all the materials applied today.
You recommend?
Yes.
Okay. Ed or Bill, do you have anything that you'd like to add to that at this time? Okay. NCO has been very active in this, and we appreciate the effort. NCO fills a very important role in our city. Thank you, Ms. Philpott. Being a public hearing, the council will listen to any comments for or against or questions. If you would like to speak to this issue, you can come forward and give your name and address, and we'll be glad to listen and answer any questions one might have. Hearing none, then we will close the meeting and deliberate. I will entertain a motion, please.
I'll
move
for approval of the reinvestment zone designation.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we accept the proposal of establishing the commercial industrial reinvestment zone number 27 as described by Ms. Philpott, Planning and Zoning Department. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Thank you. I do thank all of you. Philpott spoke not very well about this, but I can tell you that it's a culmination of a lot of people doing a lot of work, and it's some of the things that are happening in this town when we all kind of work together and get things done. And I think you can be very proud of that. Item number 7, we're going to consider allowing overnight camping in Festival Plaza for the Cook teams that are part of the annual Juneteenth celebration for Section 86-27 of the Nacogdoches Code of Ordinances. Sarah? Yes.
Mayor, Council, Sarah O'Brien, Main Street Manager. Sorry about my cell phone earlier. This request is brought to you guys by Get Cap, Head Start, and the Nacogdoches Progressive Leadership Group, who annually co-host the Juneteenth celebration. Per city ordinance, camping on city property must be specially approved by the council. The Juneteenth celebration had previously been held at E.J. Campbell, and this year they are opting to move it to our wonderful festival plaza downtown. So to do so, the cook teams that will prepare the barbecue for the celebration will need to start preparing the day before on June 17th. So we need your permission to allow them to do so. I believe Mr. Sanders and Ms. Stokes are here, should you have any other questions.
Any questions for Ms. O'Brien?
Or Mr. Sanders and Ms. Stokes? I think I'd like to congratulate the process and however this was done, that this is going to take place down here behind City Hall. It is a great place to use, and it sort of brings, it becomes a we project. I think it's a great thing, and I think everybody will thoroughly enjoy it. This town will certainly smell better. It'll be a full day. It'll be great, and I appreciate what you all do. Ms. Stokes has been working with the city on some historical projects, and Mr. Sanders, I don't have time to list all the things that he does with Head Start and this project in the park. We appreciate your efforts in our city. There has been no discussion. Motion has been made. I need a motion.
Motion would be accept this.
Yes, the overnight camp. Just as presented, seconded by any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Now we're going to hear from our city manager, Mr. Jeffers, to review the current revenues and consider what is coming revenues for the ensuing budget that they're working on, as I understand that correctly.
Yes, sir. Please. Mr. Mayor and City Council, I think that you are well aware that Nacogdoches is a home rule city. Therefore, we have a city charter which was approved by the citizens of Nacogdoches. That charter requires the city manager to submit a proposed budget to the City Council, and the City Council, through deliberations, will adopt that budget. That is the single most important document that the City Council adopts on an annual basis, simply because it establishes the level of services that you're going to provide to the citizens in the upcoming fiscal year. As you did last year, you have chosen to take small bites of the apple in reviewing the city budget, and what we're going to be looking at tonight are our revenues, and talk a little bit about what the projections might be for the next fiscal year. I need to emphasize that it's a little early on some of these projections, and therefore they will be deferred until later to the chair of the council. And after this meeting tonight, then we'll begin looking at the various expenses of the department. So looking first at the general fund and talking about our property tax, you can see on the slide that we receive about $6.3 million per year in property tax. Right now, we have collected 97% of what we had anticipated that we would collect for the current fiscal year. We fully expect that number to be 100% before much longer next year. It's too soon, based on information that we received from the appraisal district, to tell you what's going to happen with appraised values. And of course, that has a significant impact on the amount of property tax that the city will be collecting, as well as whatever the tax rate might be. But preliminarily, we've been told that there may be a slight decline, or that the property appraised values may remain stagnant. The effective tax rate allows the city to adopt a tax rate which will generate the same amount of dollars as it did in the previous year, excluding any new construction. We don't know what that effective tax rate might be. Still a little premature. We do have limited oil and gas exploration within the city. That's really going to have minimal impact on the upcoming budget, but it's something that in the future it could have some significant positive impacts, but we're not expecting anything significant in the next fiscal year. When we look at property tax effort per capita, calculating tax rates, including the appraised value, what your industrial base is, what your business base is, how strong your residential subdivisions are, many factors, and it's difficult to make a comparison about taxing effort. So what you see before you is some calculations. It's certainly not a scientific standard that you can say this is how everybody compares, but it's a consistent standard. I want to emphasize as you review that, that we do not recommend that the tax rate be set based on what another community's tax rate is. We recommend that the tax rate be set for what it takes to take care of the needs of the city of Nacogdoches. But what we've done is that we've taken the appraised value and we applied that community's tax rate and then we divide it by their population. And that gives the taxing effort per capita. We threw in Houston as one of the larger cities just to show what a significant industrial tax base can do to the community. That $406 per capita doesn't mean that everybody is paying $406 per year in property taxes per person. It means that with a large industrial base or large commercial base, that per capita number goes up. And so setting Houston aside, you can look at the other communities in the area and you can see that Nacogdoches is down below the middle of the pack in taxing effort. And it can certainly be argued that that is a good thing because our taxes are well within line of what other communities' taxing efforts are. You know, I might note that Huntsville is at $125, what skews Huntsville is the prison population. It's included in those calculations, and so it brings down their taxing effort significantly. They have over 8,000 occupants in the state facilities, and that's why that number is so much lower. Tyler, historically, has always been low. They have a strong tax base, both residential, commercial, and industrial, but once again, you can see that Nacogdoches is kind of in the middle of the pack. But that gives you a benchmark of where we are as far as our taxes. The sales tax is an important part of our general fund. You can see that we encountered some declines in the sales tax in recent years. When we prepared this year's budget, we anticipated that there would be a slight increase. It looks like that increase would be a little bit more significant than what anticipated originally. It's also important to note that we anticipate that we'll be able to project continuing increases for the next fiscal year, but they will not be significant. And it's a little bit premature to say what those might be. We can guesstimate right now that they'll be between 1 and 3% and maybe a little bit higher. We'll wait and see what type of estimates that the state comptroller provides us, and we'll continue to monitor our history very carefully. Councils would be commended for their initiative for adding the sales tax situs for projects, especially those projects to where we offer inducements. And the example that we offer is Legends of Nacogdoches, the apartment complex, in which there will be a groundbreaking ceremony shortly. Traditionally, when those projects are built, much of the supplies, building materials, they come from outside the city, and we do not collect any sales tax. And so the city council has said that if we offer incentives, then you will do a separated contract, which simply means that the sales tax on materials are going to be collected and paid to the city of Nacogdoches. So that's a good thing, but also it can skew what your sales tax are, so we always need to be mindful that those type of numbers may be in those calculations and we need to make the appropriate adjustments. Legends is a $54 million investment, and I made the assumption that 40% of that is supplies and materials. You can anticipate that that number is probably a little low. But what that would translate into the city of Nacogdoches is $200,000 in additional sales tax. That's significant. The council should be congratulated for that initiative. When we look at sales tax per capita, this is a number that's always been bothersome for city officials, but you can see that Nacogdoches is down at the bottom of the pack when we look at these numbers. Our sales tax rate is 1%, along with Houston. We're the only cities in that group that has 1%. You'll see that others that have 1.5% and they have 2%. But even with that, you can see that our sales tax, we collect about $157 per capita. Kilgore, up at the top of the list, with $810 per capita. I wish I could provide you with an explanation. I do not know what it is. We'll probably do a little bit more research to see if we can determine that. One of the reasons that our sales tax number is so low, you can see our arch nemesis with university competition, Huntsville, is down near the bottom with us, and that's because they have a university just like we do. Their enrollment in their university is about 17,000, plus they have a prison population, which doesn't generate income. But that tends to skew their results. But the fact that we have a university, which is a very positive thing for the city, it helps to bring down our per capita income, which means that there's less spending, which means that there's less sales tax that is generated. And so this will remain a focal point for the city, as well as all of our economic development partners, especially the Nacogdoches Economic Development Corporation, to grow our retail as well as our industrial base so that we can see an increase in those sales tax where we can see us moving up. Now, we are at 1% simply because the hospital district collects 1% sales tax. The maximum that a local government entity can collect in sales tax, unless there's special legislation authorizing otherwise, is 2%. And so we're maxed out, can't pick up any additional sales tax. Moving to the general fund franchise fees, the franchise fees are monies that we collect for the lease of public right-of-way by the utilities. Make no mistake about it that the citizens of Nacogdoches, the users of those services, they pay those fees. You'll see it on your bills as a pass-through. But for the electric franchise, we receive about $1.6 million per year. I might mention that on natural gas, it's $250,000. A couple of years ago, the city council entered into a new franchise agreement with the natural gas company and increased the franchise fees so it was comparable to area cities, and that's increased by over $100,000. I make reference on that slide that water and sewer, we do collect franchise fees from our own water and sewer system, but we'll talk about that more on a later slide. If we look at our general fund and permits, we have alcoholic beverage tax, $95,000. If you recall earlier, we indicated that the state legislature may be sweeping some of that money away from us because of their deficit flows. We do not yet know what, if any, impact that will have on us, but that's a possibility that $95,000 or a portion of that could go away. This does include building permit fees, and so when Legends of Nacogdoches pays all their permit fees, which means that we're going to be inspecting those constructions, we will be collecting about $46,000 in Timber Springs. We keep tapping our fingers saying, hurry up. We could be collecting as much as $54,000. And those numbers are not reflected in general fund revenues, and that could be a nice bump to what we would expect in those permit fees. Also in the general fund, fines from the municipal court are about $1.1 million per year. Those numbers tend to fluctuate wildly, more so because of the economy than anything else. If people aren't doing well, pay their fines. And yes, they can go to warrant. Yes, they go to collection agencies, but you can't find them and you can't collect the money. One of the continually more disturbing things about our municipal court fines is that 42% of those fines, or $474,000, are paid to the state, and the area of general fund miscellaneous charges. I saw our good friends from the county are here. They are gracious enough to fund the fire department by $10,000 a year, our the city library by $8,400 a year. Recreation fees are $137,000 a year, and then the sale of plots in the cemetery are $80,000 per year. Those sources of revenues tend to be rather stable from year to year. Interest revenue, not much to talk about there. If you look in, the, in our fiscal year 2007, you can see that our interest income was well over $300,000, and now we're down to about $10,000. That's kind of a two-edged sword. Money is cheaper to borrow, but also interest rates for us are practically nil. That's something that comes out of our budget. Miscellaneous revenues, we're showing a nice bump for the current fiscal year. That will drop back down for the next fiscal year, but we are working on bringing to the council the potential sale of an original airport site that was never developed. That money was, or that property we anticipate was purchased out of the general fund. We haven't even determined how long ago that money would sell the land. If the city council approves it, will go back into the general fund. The CAT fund reimbursement, that's who we buy our electricity through an aggregation agreement, and periodically we receive some significant reimbursements, and that is partly what attributes to some of the fluctuations in the historic data on that particular category. Intergovernmental, $82,000 a year is what we projected for the current fiscal year. The emergency management program grants, we received about $70,000 per year. Judge English told me today that those monies are still in the state budget, but we've been told that that's one of those items that is targeted, and we hope that it remains, that it could go away. Most of intergovernmental is grants. We receive about $12,000 a year in the police department for selected traffic enforcement programs. And also the bump in 2009, most of that was FEMA reimbursement because of our work involved with sheltering for hurricanes as well as cleaning up the damage within the community. General fund transfer is something that is misunderstood at times, but it's so very important to our general fund. I mentioned earlier about the importance of franchise fees. We have the water and sewer department pay a franchise fee to the general fund simply because the general fund maintains our city public rights away, our city streets, and they pay about $1.5 million a year. Then we have a transfer from both the utility and sanitation funds of $2 million and about $1.5 million respectively to reimburse the city for services provided by the city council, not a large budget. With the city manager's budget, the legal department, which is a very large budget, the finance department, IT, HR, as well as purchasing. And so what we do is that we say that the services provided by the city attorney, that he spends a third of his time on general fund issues, a third of his time on water and sewer issues, and a third of his time on sanitation issues, but all this funding is out of the general fund, and so we have the sanitation fund and the utility fund each refund that budget a third of its operating costs. But you can see how difficult it would be without that transfer in order to balance the general fund, because we're talking about $5 million worth of revenues. We look at the totals for the general fund. For 2011, we were down 1% over the previous fiscal year and 2% in 2010 over 2009. From 2007 until 2011, revenues are up about 5%, which is a very modest growth, but then these are difficult financial times, and so that is certainly understandable. We're not expecting any significant growth in the general fund revenues, but we will see some, a lot of that depending upon our projections for the sales tax. Before I go to the utility department, Mr. Mayor, are there any questions about the general fund?
Any relating to the water we sell, the guy takes back there?
in the utility fund, which we're fixing to talk about, that does include Central Heights water sales as a part of it. In the utility fund water sales, we have projected income for the current fiscal year of about $7.8 million. As you might suspect, water sales are impacted by what's happening through the weather. Now, this is going to be a dry summer, according to a lot of the predictors. It's even been suggested that it's going to be too dry and people may never start watering. I suspect that they will. And so we may see a spike in our sales as far as water, but it's a little bit too soon to tell. Sewer sales, they are tied to water sales. And I know that makes everybody scratch their head. Washington World and people at City Hall by charging me for sewer based on the water that I purchase. Well, we can thank that initiative on the federal government. And when we borrow money to assist with our wastewater treatment plant, which comes from the federal government to the state and to the city of Nacogdoches, when the federal government said, you will charge for sewer based on that individual's contribution to the sewer system. So how are you going to do that? Well, you could go out and meter sewer discharge, but that would be very expensive on an individual residential basis. Plus, too, that equipment that measures that water flow is not always accurate and has problems with maintenance and can malfunction. So what we do is we run some calculations. They're not overly complex. We'll take three of the winter months, and we'll say, well, that's what the average residential customer in Nacogdoches uses, and therefore close to 100% of that water goes into the sewer. So your charges for sewer for residential only are capped on the first 14,000 gallons of water that you use. If you use more than 14,000 gallons of water, then there's no additional charge for the sewer. It's unfortunate that the sewer bill many times is as much, if not more, than the water bill. And we can once again thank our federal and state overseers, the regulators, for that anomaly. But it's designed to protect the environment. Some can argue that it's overkill as far as regulation. But the bottom line is what it is and we're required to do those things. We are periodically asked, you know, are there other ways to calculate the sewer bill other than tying it to water consumption? And probably one of the more popular ways, I don't think still a minority of the cities do it, and that is to literally take 3 months of your winter consumption, and if Councilmember Brophy, if you use 8,000 gallons during the on average for the three of the winter months, then your bill will be based on 8,000 gallons of sewer consumption for the remainder of the year. And Councilmember Norton, if you use 16,000, then yours will be based on 16,000 throughout the remainder of the year. So a lot of people will be receiving different billing amounts on their sewer bills, but it's another way to do it. Our computer software will not do that, but there will be additional discussions because there are some in the community who would argue that that is a fairer way to do it instead of using averages. The problem with using averages is that there's a very small test group in the middle where the averages work perfectly, and there's a larger group on the low end where they're getting a little bit of a break on their sewer charges, and there's another large group on the upper end where they're probably paying more than they should be, but it's the best system that we have right now, and practically it's what the computer software will handle. Well, let's get some new computer software. We're probably talking about over $1 million investment to completely redo the accounting package as far as water and sewer is concerned. revisiting that fee structure for possible adjustments during the upcoming fiscal year. Those calculations had not yet been done. Deja vu on the utility of interest, not much to talk about, other than you can see 5 years ago we were receiving almost $1 million a year in interest, and now we're down to around $50,000. Looking at miscellaneous revenues in the utility fund, a lot of that is water and sewer tax, and we're going to be revisiting that fee structure. I think that we're probably providing those taps for less than what it costs the city to make those taps. Late fees, when you don't pay your water bill on time, we collect about $300,000 per year in late fees. That's a high number, an alarming number, but that's the way that we're structured, and it encourages people to pay their bill on a timely fashion. Some just don't do it. Total utility revenues for the current fiscal year, they're down 4% over the last fiscal year. Overall, the last 5 years are up about 4%. Once again, a very modest increase in utility bills. Any questions about the utility department before we move to the sanitation department, Mr. Mayor?
I think people know this, but I think it's important to remind them that these are each separate funds. Aside from the transfers and sharing administrative costs, utility funds are used to maintain utilities. We don't take them there to do projects outside the utility. Is that correct?
That's an excellent point. In the governmental terminology, it's known as an enterprise fund. Therefore, the utility fund and the sanitation fund, they survive on their own fees. There are no tax dollars that go to subsidize those operations. And as an enterprise fund, it's more of a business model. And this is what it costs us to provide the service. Therefore, this is what we're going to charge. We don't, and we'll talk about this more when we get into the expense side, it's probably important to go ahead and mention now. The city does not make a profit like the private sector does. Our profit is depreciation. And we have begun, the city council made a wise decision to begin setting aside money where we can pay as we go instead of borrowing money. It would happen a lot cheaper, even though interest rates are extremely low right now. Our bonded debt, especially in the utility fund, is way too high, but we'll talk about that more on the expense side.
And the repair.
landfill receipts, and these are for private companies that take refuse to the landfill. They're also for commercial businesses that take trash to the landfill. And you do know that for residential customers that we provide one free trip to the landfill per year for certain items. It's not unrestricted. But as the council knows, nothing is free. It's actually built into the rate base, and so there's a cost for handling that trash that's taken out there, and we have to plug into residential customers' bill. Sanitation interest income, once again, nothing much to talk about. 5 years ago, bless you, we will receive $164,000 this fiscal year. We're receiving about $5,000. On miscellaneous revenues, those numbers tend to fluctuate significantly, and most of this is the sale of surplus equipment. Gary Basden, your purchasing manager, has begun selling your equipment online with an automated auctioneer, and it's brought in significantly more dollars than what we've had in the past. It's been a very successful program. Looking at the sanitation department, total revenues, they're down about 4% over the last fiscal year. I suspect that they'll bump up over what we collected in 2010. Part of the fluctuation in the revenues is we have received some oil and gas monies at the landfill. There is no production, so that was a one-time payment, and maybe in the future we'll see some additional monies. Mr. Mayor, any questions about the sanitation department revenues? Hotel motel tax. We are anticipating the total revenue to be down about 1% over 2010. I suspect that we will collect over $1 million again this fiscal year. Much of that activity, I suspect, is attributed to oil and gas exploration and those individuals staying in our hotels and motels. I think the council is aware that 73% of the hotel tax money goes to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, our partners across the street, and they certainly do an excellent job in promoting conventions in our community.
Do you think it's going to be down, the revenue in our new budget?
No, typically we underestimate that. The percentage applies no matter what it is in the new budget. We're expecting the numbers to stay up. Hotel motel tax interest income, but since it's a smaller fund, certainly nothing much to talk about. Hotel motel tax miscellaneous, that's late fee. Someone's party and making the payments, and they get the opportunity to pay us a little bit of extra money. Hotel motel tax totals, once again in 2011, we originally projected $857,000. I think we're on track to be close to $1 million. Any questions about hotel motel tax?
And this will be covered, I guess, in expenses, but this is also very closely designated funds.
Yes, it cannot be used to hire policemen, it cannot be used to patch potholes, it has to be used to promote tourism and conventions or historic preservation. Airport. City Council. Still a fuel concession. four intergovernmental. Our grants, it's time for us probably to get plugged back in for some of the larger grants. These grants will be aimed at making the city existing runway at the airport. From the general fund, you mentioned that it is, operations are still subsidized, but we've been putting in about $82,000 per year. But that's much better than what we used to do. That number was well over a quarter of a million. So the airport concession, once again, has been saving for those operations out there. Airport total revenues, we project they'll be up for the current fiscal year by about 8%. So we're looking at $482,000. Mr. Mayor, that concludes my presentation on revenues.
I think anybody that has listened to this can certainly be comforted, if, and they understand that the money, all this money comes from citizens, whether they're buying water or paying taxes, or in large part there are other than citizens paying for it. We know that the franchise fee, but I mean, I would think people listening to this would appreciate the careful management that goes on by staff, our city manager. It's a convoluted bookkeeping system, is it not? Municipal bookkeeping is difficult. And I think the enterprise zones make it a more manageable thing. I like that idea.
It's called governmental accounting, which I guess translates into convoluted.
Government's convoluted, I think. But yeah. I appreciate it. I know council does. Effort done, and be sure to tell your staff members that we appreciate it. Head scratching. And it's a huge responsibility that they have and you have, and I can tell you, you've done a good job with that. I really saw very little dozing. A couple, but not many. That was good. Item number 9, there's no action needed there, is that correct? Item number 9, we're going to review draft contingency plan. Our engineer.
Mayor and Council, good evening. Steve Bartlett, city engineer. Wise city manager told me a long time ago, never follow a budget presentation. Engineers don't get the message. Tonight, come to you just to review our draft contingency plan, which is part of our existing ordinance. This is really for informational purposes tonight. We have new council members and council members who may not have been through this as well. no particular action is going to be requested. We just felt this would help inform both you and the public of our process and our procedure during water shortages. As you know, much of Texas is currently in a drought. It's been evidenced by fire law across Texas, primarily in the western, southern, some northern areas. That's the result of very low rainfall. Our lake, if you've been out to Lake Nacogdoches, certainly is low, and it's at its lowest level since it was originally built in the late 70s. The 90-day forecast from NOAA Weather still shows our region to be drier than normal, which is about all they rate. So we anticipate that we will still struggle with some rainfall. We felt it was prudent to kind of dust off this ordinance and begin a monitoring program of where we were. The purpose of our drought contingency plan is basically to conserve our available water supply. It is a system where we protect the integrity of our water supply facilities, both our quality of water and our volume of water. It will minimize the adverse impacts that might occur from a water shortage. The drought contingency plan requires us to coordinate with other regional water planning groups in our area, as well as do some education for our general public to increase their awareness of water use and water saving measures. It also has a complete section where we deal with our wholesale water customers, and a good example of that would be some of our water supply corporations that have joined our city and are interconnected into our water system, in some cases only for emergency purposes. But nonetheless, there are certain restrictions that we would also invoke to them as water users. We are really fortunate in Nacogdoches to have two separate independent water supplies. A large portion of our city is supplied by surface water from Lake Nacogdoches. And as you're probably aware, we have a surface water treatment plant right there at the dam. We treat that water and pipe it back into town through a large diameter pipe where we then distribute it to various parts of the city. As I said earlier, the lake is at its lowest levels since the late 70s, which is 6 feet below our normal pool. The good news is a number of years ago, we increased our plant size and upgraded our plant, and we're actually still only at 25% of the capacity of the plant. We have a lot of excess capacity available to the plant. Our water intakes, even though you have a big plant, if you can't get water into the plant, you have a problem. But I want to let you know our water intakes begin at about 14 foot below normal pool, with a second water intake about 30 foot below normal pool. And we're again rolling 6 foot below. We've got a lot of water left to be able to pull in to the lake. The other portion of our city is supplied by a series of 5 active deep water wells, in other words, groundwater. We have a 6th well that will be coming online hopefully later this summer and is currently up for repair. Our water well capacity, we're operating near about 26% of our normal daily usage. As you can see, we have a lot of available water supply capacity. The drought contingency plan outlines several stages of responses that we would make as we begin to see shortages of water, stages 1 through 5. And I try to compress those, they're pretty long-winded, so bear with me. Stage 1 is a mild water shortage, and that's triggered by a demand where we're exceeding 90% of our production capacity during a 4-day period, and begins, we're in the mid-20s. At this point, the city discontinues any unnecessary use of water like flushing fire hydrants and dead-end water lines, and we would instantly prioritize repairing any mainline breaks or leaks, which you would think we would prioritize anyway. We would return all of our plant and pump facilities to a working condition. At any given point in time, we have facilities that are out of service for repair or maintenance. We have a lot of redundancy in our pumps and tankage and all the things that go on to allow us to be able to do that without our citizens knowing. So we've got part of the system down. We can reroute water and keep everybody functional. Stage 1 would also ask for voluntary citizen conservation, and specifically for them to begin to limit landscape irrigation to some specific times of day during the week. But again, that's voluntary. If things were a little worse, where we were exceeding 92% of our production capacity, we would do some of the same things that were logical from that first stage. But we would now have some mandatory limits on the times and the days for water. You'd be based on your address in a couple of days a week, but it would no longer be voluntary. We'd place limitations on vehicle washing. very specific times that you can do that. Bucket washing, for example, would be requested. Large volume water uses like filling swimming pools and large tanks would have specific times during low use times at night when you can do that. Restaurants would be prohibited from just serving water other than customers that specifically requested it. And we would stop the withdrawal from our fire hydrants except, of course, for firefighting. Surprisingly enough, we have a lot of construction activity where they pick up a fire hydrant meter and they purchase water through a fire hydrant to fill large water tanks for construction purposes. During a stage two water shortage, we would also prohibit the wash down things like sidewalks and driveways and buildings. You can see we're moving into more and more necessary water use as a focus. Stage three is where we're in a severe water shortage where we've exceeded 94% of our capacity. Again, it would invoke all the previous measures that made sense, but would prohibit landscape watering using hose-end sprinklers, mostly because guys like me probably remember at 3 in the morning to let the sprinkler on. So it would only be timed sprinkler systems, for example, that could be used on specific days and times. Watering of golf courses would be prohibited, although our golf courses here primarily use their own water supply reservoir for their bulk watering in the fairway. We'd also prohibit the use now of water for construction purposes, except by special variance. Stage four is really our last major stage. We're at a critical water shortage of 96 or over 96% of our production capacity. It again would involve all the previous restrictions, but modify those to limit things like irrigation or landscape watering only to handheld hoses and drip systems. It would prohibit residential vehicle washing, and it would limit commercial washing of cars, for example, to some very specific times during the day, like 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., when most residents work home. Filling things like pools and tankage would be prohibited, and there would be no new taps made at that point in time, or no requests for enlarged taps made, just to limit withdrawal from our system. Stage 5 is kind of a unique animal, and I wouldn't see us moving stages 1 through 4 to 5, so 5 is kind of a misnomer. 5 is really intended for an emergency situation. It's a disaster response stage. This is the only provision that the ordinance allows a city manager is designated to vote in his command. Basically, when we have a major line break or a pump out or a contamination issue, he can immediately go to a stage 5 water shortage. You can imagine it reduces our usage to, tries to reduce our usage by 75%. To put it in perspective, the stage 4 water conservation was only an 11% target reduction. So this is a very major water reduction where we are only using water that's necessary for public health and safety. So, that's the outlines of our basic trigger points for it. As you can see, our current usage is still relatively low. Now, we have been through very mild months, even though we haven't had rain. The spring season is not a heavy water season. It's not a hot weather season. We don't feel there are any imminent threats or immediate threats to our water supply. We are cautious but optimistic. We are here, of course, to keep you informed, and we'll continue to keep you informed. We wanted you to know about the process as we enter the summer months and our very high water use times. We also, wanted to inform the citizens that it's a good time to start thinking about some conservation. Fixing that leaking faucet or that toilet that runs all night, this would be a really good time to do that. We'd like to encourage that. They might also have a pleasant surprise in their next water bill, if they do. We will continue to monitor our conditions daily at this point, and we can avoid problems sneaking up on us. So we felt it was prudent to come to you and kind of outline what the provisions of this plan were. Not that we need to move into these plans. Again, no action is requested tonight. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Any questions?
I just have a comment. I was so impressed with the interview you did with the newspaper because it really does educate the citizens on what there is. And just like you said, it really makes you stop and think about doing something before we actually get to that point, and it may prevent us from getting to stage 4 if we don't have a drought. So thank you
very much for doing
that. I think it's important that, and you said it very well, that we're doing this tonight not because we're getting ready for a drought. I mean, we are getting ready for it, but are anticipating it. It's refresh our minds and to reevaluate our plan and see if it needs to be changed or not changed. That,
absolutely.
I don't want people to be scared about our water supply.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yeah, I think you deserve a raise.
You know, we live in not only a
never follow the budget presentation.
Maybe you want to try to hide something.
Thank
you very much.
Thank you very much.
That's our last agenda item. Thank you all for being here, and thank the staff for putting all this together for us. Appreciate it. Meeting adjourned.
All right.